This Week in Nuclear, episode number 79 for October 19th, 2009. The Thorium Energy Alliance Conference, a gathering of visionaries. Welcome to the show. This is John Wheeler bringing you This Week in Nuclear podcast. Sitting in the audience this morning at the inaugural conference for the Thorium Energy Alliance, I couldn't help but think about the people who stood around that pile of uranium and graphite in a squash court almost 70 years ago at the site of the first man-made, self-sustained nuclear chain reaction. Most were visionaries, brilliant scientists, some engineers, a few reporters, and I wondered how many of them truly understood the significance of what they were doing that day and how their work would change the world. That same mix of talent was here today: engineers, physicists, the media, and some clearly have a vision for the future and a compelling case for getting there. This episode of This Week in Nuclear is an audio recording of the keynote address for the conference given by Kurt Sorensen of Energy from Thorium. Kurt, who's a friend of mine, is a passionate engineer with a vision that is best told in his own words. So I hope you enjoy the show. And now here's Kurt.
Hey everybody! How's it going? I want to thank you all for coming to the Thorium Energy Alliance inaugural conference. And this is going to be a great couple of days in order for us to meet each other in person and to share some knowledge with the general public out there. And I just want to introduce Kurt Sorensen, who without this, I wouldn't be at all interested or have any knowledge about the subject of thorium energy. And you've done the yeoman's task, Kirk, of getting quite a group of folks together there on the internet. And I'm glad that you picked up that yoke from some founding members back in the post-World War II ancient days of nuclear research. And you've blown the dust off of 30 years of no research, essentially. You know, there's been a long, dry desert, and it's going to be young, handsome fellows like you that get us back to the road of prosperity and innovation. So I want to have Kirk, all of you acknowledge Kirk. You know, he's not just a keynote speaker. He's really very key to all of this, and I know we're going to have great success together with all this. So slap your hands together for Kirk.
Thank you, John.
You bet.
Thank you very much. Boy, it is a tremendous pleasure for me to be here today. And I want to thank John so much for what he's done in starting the Thorium Energy Alliance and setting up this conference. A few months ago, John called me up and he said, "Hey, guess what? I've got a conference center and I've got a room, and so we need to get some people there. Otherwise, I'm going to be sitting around eating the hors d'oeuvres by myself." So that was how the conference, I think, got its start. But I think John said far too many nice things about me. I'm honored to be here in the room with some real pioneers, folks like Ralph Moir, who's been carrying this flame a whole lot longer than I have, and convincing some very influential people about it. And kind of want to say hi to two of the people who got me started on this path, which is, Bruce Patton and Rod Adams right there. And if it wasn't for those two guys, I probably never would have heard of what thorium was or had any idea what its implications are. So it's a great pleasure to be there. You know, we're a small group, but it's some of my favorite people in the blogosphere and the internet are here today, and I think we're going to have some great talks. Some of you I know fairly well, some of you I sort of know internet well, and some of you I've never met at all before. And I think we're going to have a great chance just through breaks and social events and so forth to get to know each other better and find out more about this.
Do I run this right here?
Yes.
I don't know how Office 2007 works. Yeah. So I've made the conversion about a month and a half ago to Linux, so I'm busy trying to figure out Linux rather than Microsoft.
All right. So we just page down to keep going.
Yep.
Okay. Sounds good. All right.
Some of you know I love history. I love to read historical developments of technology and how things really happen. And so let me start out with a story. This right here is the nucleus of a helium atom. I imagine a few of us have probably opened up the small end of a balloon and sucked a few of these down. Anybody ever realize that when you're sucking down helium, you're actually sucking down nuclear waste from millions of years ago inside the Earth? I shocked a reporter the other day by telling her that. She had, a little bit of a mental shock as I relayed that to her. But helium has four nucleons in its nucleus. It got two protons and two neutrons. And about somewhere in the last 100 years, somebody figured out that every time a nuclear decay takes place, it throws out one of these helium nuclei. It throws it out and it loses four mass numbers. And so, by implication, they begin to think, well, there's probably four different ways, four different chains that matter can follow when it decays. And they looked in nature, and sure enough, they found one of them. It was uranium-235, and every time it decays, it loses four numbers. You can see 1, 2, 3, 4, and it gets to the end, and I think it gets to, like, 207 or something like that. I ran out of room on the slide. And they looked for another one, and they found uranium-238, and it drops by 4. And they found thorium, and it drops by 4. And then there was this one. There was this one, and nobody could find it. It was the, I don't know exactly what it's called, but it's the other one. It's the one of the four that was extinct on Earth. And there was a fellow named Glenn Seaborg, who was a famous chemist in California. And this is during the Manhattan Project. He said, you know what, I want to find out if we can make something that lives in this chain that nobody's looked for before. And so he had a grad student named John Goffman. And he told John Goffman to go and bombard thorium with neutrons. He said, let's see if we can make something that lives in this chain. And they made uranium-233 from thorium. And Seaborg, he was a real smart guy. I mean, he was very intuitive about how things might work. And he said to Goffman, you know what? Let's go see if uranium-233 will fission. Let's see if it will split when we hit it with a neutron. And sure enough, it turns out it did split. It turns out that you could turn thorium into thorium-233 and then it would decay and ultimately end up as uranium-233. Now, to most of us non-physicists in the world, this would seem like one of those interesting little facts that doesn't really make a whole bunch of difference. But Glenn Seaborg wasn't one of these kind of guys. He was a brilliant mind. He was a guy who could see way down the road. And when he figured out that thorium would turn into uranium-233 and would fission and have certain properties, he turns to Goffman and he says, we've just made a $50 quadrillion discovery. Because the implication of what he'd figured out was that billions of years ago, a supernova that created all the matter that now forms our planet and the solar system and the sun and everything else had locked up in the form of thorium a vast amount of energy. I mean, a staggering amount of energy that had been waiting for 5 billion years for us to discover what it means and what it could do. And on that day, when Goffman and Seaborg made their realization of the properties of thorium, they opened up a future for us that I think even now we are just beginning to dimly realize. It's a future that means that we can have the energy that we need to make our society work, literally, for the foreseeable horizon of humanity, millions of years in the future. And it's based on the fact that uranium-233 and thorium have properties that allow them to be burned indefinitely in reactors that are not terribly dissimilar from the kinds we have now, what a nuclear engineer would call a thermal spectrum reactor. This is a really big deal. But as I said, dimly appreciated. Even today, there are few people, even within the nuclear engineering community, that appreciate the implications that Goffman and Seaborg grasped 50 years ago in that laboratory in California. But back in the 50s, it was a little better grasped than it is now. We had luminaries like Eugene Wigner and Alvin Weinberg who were actively trying to develop thorium reactors that could take advantage of Seaborg's discovery in order to provide clean and abundant power for society. They actually convinced our government to go and stockpile thorium, a large stockpile, because they saw it being of something of such important value and so strategic to the future of our country that they were able to convince them to purchase about 3,200 tons of thorium. Well, many years later, we apparently forgot what it was that thorium was for, because we turned around and we buried it in the desert of Nevada. Right there is the best thorium mine in the world. 3,200 tons of thorium buried in a small, or in about a 12-foot ditch out of the Nevada test site. This picture, I believe, was taken in 2005. It's all in barrels inside those cargo containers. So why should we care about what's sitting in a ditch in Nevada, obviously of very little value to whoever put it there? Well, you're going to get my opinion why I think we should care about it. I read a book several years ago called Resource Wars that describes the conflicts that we are looking to probably be involved in the future. And they're based around the simple human need for energy, for water, for strategic resources. It's probably not too much of a stretch to say that most of our military endeavors are based around securing and protecting our access to strategic resources. Several months ago, I was at a conference where I heard a three-star general with the U.S. Army. He was the afternoon speaker, and he got up and he said, talked about the amount of oil that we import every year. He talked about the amount of coal that we consume. He talked about the strategic threats to different areas in the world and how the U.S. Army might engage that or be involved with that. And then this general went ahead and, without a hiccup, after talking about these resources, began to talk about how the Army would be engaged in conflict. And I remember after hearing that talk, I was very troubled. I went home, I went back to my room, and I thought about it, and I thought, It is a sad and scary thought to me that the need for resources and the inherent possibility of conflict are so generally accepted by our society. Is there something we can do to break that connection? Do we have to look unpleasantly towards a future where resource wars will dominate our involvements and our military engagements and our domestic and foreign policy? I don't want us to get to that kind of future. Is there a way out of it? Is there a resource that we can imagine of sufficient magnitude that it could enable us to disentangle from the resources now that cause us so much trouble? And I believe there is. I think that is at the heart what it is that we are going to be talking about here at the conference today is thorium. Now, I'm going to show you some ideal numbers here. If we could consume thorium perfectly, if we had a 100% efficient reactor, then we would be able to replace the world's energy consumption of coal, oil, natural gas, even uranium, with a small fraction of the amount of thorium that we even currently consume in the form of uranium. You can see that for about one-tenth the amount of thorium that we use uranium, we can meet the whole world's energy needs if we were able to completely utilize the energy from thorium. Now, is that a realistic goal? Can we realistically imagine consuming the energy completely from thorium? Or are we confined to consume only a small amount of the energy from thorium like we consume a small amount of the energy from uranium? And I believe the answer is yes, is that we have a technological prospect to do far better with thorium than we've been able to do heretofore with uranium. And that is because of those special properties of thorium that Goffman and Seaborg discovered 60 years ago. So, I'm not sure why everybody is here, but if I may venture a guess, I would say most people are here at this conference on their own nickel. I would say you have come here because you have decided for yourself that this is a valuable place to be. There may be a few who are here in official travel, but I would say probably the majority are here because of your own excitement in this field. And I think a lot of that comes about because you've looked into this, you've studied this, and you've seen the potential. And it's a compelling story. It's a story that gives us hope for the future, that gives us the realistic hope that we might be able to imagine a future for our children where resource wars do not dominate the equation, where we are not in an increasingly slippery energy security situation, where we can imagine a domestic source of energy that can not only provide all the energy that we need, but could provide the energy that's needed for other nations as well. And that, in short, I think is the inherent promise of thorium. Thank you. Do we have any questions?
So those numbers are per year?
Per year, yes, sir. I think those were calibrated off 2007 there. Okay. I think we're going to... go ahead.
The 3,200 tons is just a mere fraction of what we have. Where else does the U.S. have thorium?
The U.S. is the possessor of probably the most compelling thorium supply in North America, in the Lemhi Pass in Idaho. And there is a vast amount of thorium there. There's also a large amount of thorium in beach sands in Georgia and Florida. Thorium is not a particularly uncommon metal. It's slightly less common than tin. It's about three times more common than uranium. And because of those special nuclear properties it has, it can be consumed theoretically to a much higher degree of efficiency in reactors that are similar to the ones we have today, thermal spectrum reactors. And that's a very unique feature of thorium that is not shared by uranium. So thorium is something that has fantastic potential for pretty much all the nations of the world because of its ubiquity in the Earth's crust. Yes, sir.
I live not far from the White Mountains. I understand that there's a lot of thorium in formations called the Conway Granites.
Yes, absolutely.
Will I have to worry about my beautiful White Mountains?
I don't think so. The amount of thorium that's needed is so trivially small that I found a study from Oak Ridge National Labs that was done that showed that a pit in the Lemhi Pass area about the size of a football field would produce 5,000 tons of thorium a year, which is pretty close to the world energy requirement. So I think if we could sacrifice a football field in Idaho, we could pretty much power the whole world, assuming we can hit those high efficiencies for utilization of thorium. Yes, sir.
I'd like to point out that you could also operate in a fast spectrum.
Yes. A fast spectrum. And that was kind of the distinction I was making between thorium and uranium. Uranium can be completely consumed in a fast spectrum reactor, whereas thorium can be completely consumed in a fast or thermal spectrum reactor. And that's sort of the salient difference between the two. Thorium has no naturally fissile isotope, though, so we have to start it with something, unlike uranium, which does have a naturally fissile isotope.
Again, that was Kurt Sorensen of Energy from Thorium, who was providing the keynote address at the inaugural conference for the Thorium Energy Alliance. It's been a great conference so far. We've got another day to go. I've been reporting events from the conference on my Twitter feed. So if you don't follow me on Twitter, you might want to try that. I'll be providing updates again tomorrow of the events and happenings and key takeaway messages that I'm getting out of the conference. There's a link for my Twitter feed on the homepage at thisweekinnuclear.com. That's it for this show. Thanks for tuning in to This Week in Nuclear. This is John Wheeler. Have a great day.